Channel is depconf18-z on OFTC, and this is on-demand sandboxing buff. I have entirely forgotten already how I titled it, which is entirely fine. And basically, yeah, my goal, I would say, was to talk about how we can provide a better experience with sandboxing applications and so on. For users and developers, and I guess I would love to start with who you all are and what you want to talk about and things like that. So I guess I already did introduce what I want to talk about, but I'm Nico. I've been a Debian contributor for a couple of years. Hi, and have a seat, please. So I was saying I'm Nico, I have been a Debian contributor for a couple of years, still not a DD because I'm particularly lazy about doing the paperwork thing, but at least I started the NM process again. And yeah, generally my interest is in this topic is partly because I, you know, do not particularly like random code from the internet on my laptop with all my permissions, and partly because I because I think it's a worthwhile problem to fix.
Hi, I'm Julian. I'm from the app team, and my interest basically is the ability. Basically, what I would like to see is to have untrusted apps I can just install from the internet and run, without having to trust it and without it having access to my data and my webcam or whatever.
I'm Paul. I'm interested in converting the Debian Archive into Flatpaks.
I'm Tagatsugu Nokubi. I'm mainly maintaining some kind of natural processor. Natural language processing packages, especially for Japanese.
I'm Alex Doyle. I'm a build engineer at Cumulus Networks, and my interest in this was providing isolated build environments for developers to build in. So currently we're using Shroots for that, but it takes a while to get in and out of them. And we're looking at Docker containers as well as maybe an option for providing isolated build environments, because we have a shared build systems. We don't want developers stomping over each other every time they install new packages. So I'm curious as to what sort of sandboxing technologies and options are out there.
I'm Shia. I'm an SRE. We are using Docker and Kubernetes. So I'm curious if there's some other options, other than Docker, and it's working for us. Thank you.
Okay, so that's all.
Okay, so you did not wish to introduce yourself, or? I was looking to your friend behind you. That's entirely okay. Now, by the way, if you wish to speak, please use one of the microphones. We have plenty of those. And I did that without speaking into the microphone. So yeah, see that we have quite a few people interested, some of which, like some of you, seem to be more heavily interested in like build environments. Some of you are interested in having more or less more desktop sandboxing kind of stuff. Thankfully, at least from my perspective, a lot of the problems that are the same, in the sense that we need to provide clean environments with, and we need to do this relatively fast. Actually, how many people here are using sbuild or shroot? What? Oh, sorry. I was asking if you ever used sbuild or shroot. Okay. Hi. You just missed the round of introduction. So, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. Okay. My name is Ravin. I'm from My name is Vivek Das Mohapatra. I work for Calabra. We are currently in one major project we're assigned with Valve, as part of which I'm working on runtime shared library isolation technology.
Okay. Thanks. Feel free to sit more in here if you want, and also feel free to introduce yourself.
I'm from the kernel team, mainly maintain ARM EL kernel.
So the reason why I ask you how many people use sbuild and sch-root here is because sch-root is the closest thing we have to more or less end-demand sandboxed environment in Debian currently. Of course, it has two major problems. The first one is that it's not a particularly good security boundary in the sense that it's just a root and these days we have a bunch of there are better isolation features in the kernel we should be taking advantage of, like namespaces and seccomp filtering and possibly security modules like AppArmor. Now that we have one which is available by default. Full disclaimer, I am on the AppArmor team, so I am slightly biased in favor of it. So generally, like one of the questions I've been asking myself is, to be entirely fair, it was prompted by Indri, who recently pointed out that sch-root does most of what I want, just not, it's not particularly fast at it, because, I mean, I don't know if you, for those of you who run sbuild, the first thing sbuild does is it updates apt in the chroot. It runs an install in the chroot, and that already takes by itself most of a minute. And waiting a minute to start an application is not particularly good. Or waiting a minute to enter your development environment is also not particularly good. I guess I can just ask you a question, Julian. How terrible would it be if we did things like not actually installing packages inside the sandbox, as in not even running apt inside the sandbox, and just extracting the deb in there? Well, it depends on the deb, right? So, like a desktop application probably would crash if you don't run the maintainer scripts, because it has stuff like G settings which you need to update. You need to update the database for the. So, if you don't run the maintainer scripts, these apps don't work. And you can't use them. I think most of the time is not spent in running the maintainer scripts, but in running the unpacking. And for the what you should do probably inside one of these is to run the whole thing with eat my data and then do a sync at the end, so you avoid the syncs in between.
Yeah, or just. I guess it would definitely be possible to just to have the whole image in tempfs and then eat my data. Doesn't matter because it's.
Yeah, I used when I used sbuild, I used the tempfs to build on, and it was much nicer. And overlay fs with tempfs at the upper layer.
So for people who are not super familiar with sch-root, that's basically the equivalent of using an overlay FS for that basically lets you reuse the same base image for all the shroots and as you spawn new shroots. So it would be a bit like using the same from for a Docker build, I guess. The main difference is that here's the second layer of your sandbox would only exist in tempfs, so it's not actually written to disk, which is actually quite nice in terms of how fast it goes. Of course it means that you use a bunch more RAM, but there are also ways we can deal with that. Um, Yeah, I wanted to ask, like, are there people here already doing that sort of sandboxing for development environments or desktop applications, and what do you already use?
Currently, I typically have a few SGroots, but they're sort of long-lived because I'll go into them, I need to isolate, because for my work I need to quite often try out some dodgy patches to libc, which can't really go into a normal development environment because, you know, you can't break libc, the world catches fire. So they're currently quite long-lived, but again, that's because they're slow to set up. If they were fast to set up, I wouldn't keep them lying around as long because, you know, I'd have a cleaner start every time and I wouldn't get assumptions baked in, which does happen occasionally. So yeah, I'm not doing anything clever at the moment and I probably should.
And at Cumulus, we're using them as part of the build process. So for our release, we have truths tagged for each release that will have a set version of packages, Debian packages, plus the stuff we're building. So it's a consistent environment for the build, and then developers will also use those. They can log into them, install their development versions of their packages, and test against what the actual release is. So we're using them both as an automated build environment that gets run to build packages from source, and as also as a development environment for developers to be able to play around without blowing anything else up. They do tend to be fairly long-lived. And then people will set them up, install a bunch of dependencies, and then continue to develop within them. But at new releases, they can always, you know, close it out, bring up a new one, and reinitialize everything. So that's maybe not the intended use, but that's how we found it actually works pretty nicely to use them.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that you had issues with developers kind of stomping on one another's foot by, because they were using the same environments. What did you mean by that?
So we use the shroots to avoid that happening. So every time they log in, this also has the advantage of having the build systems be isolated from the shroots they're running, so somebody doesn't install, you know, packages within them on the build system itself rather than within the shroot. But one of the things we're looking at with that workflow is maybe using Docker to create a build environment where they can actually play around some, and then nobody has access on the roots on the host systems apart from the sysadmins. So there's still some configuration, I think, to be done there. But it's worked. The downside is that when you're loading a shroot, it's a compressed file system, so it has to decompress, and then everything gets mounted, and then they're in there. And then when they exit, it also has to recompress their personal copy of that. So there's a bit of a hit getting in and out of it, like you've mentioned, starting up your environment.
So with the compression, I think you SGroot, I think it supports LC4, I'm not sure. So that's at least relatively fast, I think. So normally it uses GSIP, I think, and that's relatively slow, but if you use LC4, it's quite fast, I think.
Yeah, sorry, I took a second to collect my thought. I think so. We heard a bit from people who are already using that sort of things. I mentioned, for instance, I'm already also using SGroot. I think I would like also to people to mention the main inconvenience you encounter. You mentioned that it's a bit slow to get in and out of the isolated environment, but yeah, we didn't really hear about anything else, so if anybody wants to take the mic.
So one of the things that I have to do occasionally is sort of use the actual graphics hardware or sound hardware on the machine, and you know, it can be, sometimes it's a bit of a pain remembering to mount all of the right things that a modern desktop environment needs into the cheroot, so things are exposed and things don't immediately. So the thing that happened, I don't know if any of you were in my talk, but one of my demos worked and the other one didn't, and the second one didn't work because if you don't have everything set up just right, Pulse Audio will go into a CPU eating deadlock. as soon as you try to play sound through it, which is, I think, what broke my second demo, because I had one missing thing that wasn't mounted in the cheroot. But you can't keep everything mounted all the time, because sometimes when you install a package, it will do things. And if it can actually communicate with a machine, then like a service might get killed if you mount all of the run directories and so forth. So you have to be careful. You can't keep them mounted all the time. In case you install a package which does interact with it. It's a little bit different for me because the stuff that I'm doing is things that need to interact with desktop type things all the time, which I suppose isn't necessarily what people are always working with, but if you are in that use case, it's awkward. You need two conflicting things. You want to be able to interact with the real system in some ways, but at the same time you really, really don't want to touch certain services and so forth. So that's kind of a pain point for me.
It's interesting because you said it's not necessarily what people are doing, but it's very much what you need to be doing if you want to run desktop things at all. And
right.
I mean, since Pabs mentioned Flatpak, it's one of the things I've been looking towards there because they have all those problems to solve. They have a bunch of other problems they don't solve. And actually, I guess I will mention that as my major complaint currently, which is that there is actually no tooling to tell you, to basically tell you, oh, your shoot image has pending security updates you should update and things like that, which is a problem both with Flatpak and Snap, but also with Docker, where it can be, I guess, a bit more of a problem if you run that like in a production environment. Because suddenly you just don't have updates for for your production environment.
Well, for snaps, there's a notification service, I think, which tells the developer who uploaded the snap to the snap store, tells them that they have security updates for the packages they include. But if they build other software from Git or something, they don't get notifications for that.
Okay, I didn't know that Snap already built something for that. It's actually super encouraging.
It seems quite nice.
Okay, so if nobody else wants to mention anything about that, I thought we could perhaps brainstorm about what we can do to solve those problems, because so we mentioned that it takes a long time to set up environments, that it's difficult to actually get desktop stuff to run in there, and that we want or need the ability to know what is installed in terms of packages inside the environment so that we can detect when there are updates available for it. And I guess if nobody minds, I wouldn't mind starting with what can we do to make like setup faster for those environments? Because
I'm using PBuilder with CowBuilder, and that's reasonably fast. There's a pre-built search root, and it creates a new directory, and I think it uses hard links too. Set up the temporary router first.
Oh, so you mean that CoreBuilder avoids doing actual installations and...
Yeah. You create the search root, and that's the primary storage, and then when you're building a package, it creates a hard-linked copy of that.
Oh, okay.
And then it installs build dependencies and does a building.
Okay, so that sounds fairly similar to what SBuild does if you use it with an OverlayFS and TampFS or something like that.
Yeah, the CowBuilder thing is a bit of a hack that predates OverlayFS. So if you get the choice to use OverlayFS, you should do that instead.
Yes.
So I think another thing that could be considered maybe is like using Debian systems and build frameworks out of them for development or for running applications, and then stuff them into OSTree or something, which enables you to manage these frameworks and share the contents. And then you can just combine the frameworks together with your to build your own chain route and work in that or run the app in it. Basically, like a Flatpak works, but with Debian packages. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can add an overlay on top of that and then install any remaining packages you're missing, but you get a speed up because you have most of the packages already installed.
Also, you mean basically putting more packages in the base image and not just a result of the bootstrap, for instance.
Yeah, you could have the base image. You could have an overlay, like a GNOME overlay or a development overlay, and then which has Build Essential installed and stuff. And then you could just install the remaining build dependencies when you're building the package or when you're running an app. You could just install the remaining dependencies for that app, and then you save time for the setup.
Yes, that's actually very fair. That we could probably have multiple overlays and be able to reuse more stuff, not just like the base image, but more things on top. Something I was also somewhat wondering about is, we can definitely cache environments. Like basically, if I already built a given environment with a set of packages, and I decide I want a similar environment again, probably because I'm running as build repeatedly or something, I could definitely just get a copy of the same one again without having to redo the whole setup phase. Then I think that would be especially relevant if we're talking about sandboxing desktop apps and so on, because it might be fine to wait 30 seconds or something when we are first starting Firefox or LibreOffice or whatever. If I have to wait 30 seconds every time I open a LibreOffice document, I will be very, very sad.
I think for desktop apps, another approach we haven't talked about for desktop apps might be to just have normal devs and install them all on the host system and then basically bind mount the host system into a container and then run the app in there with some isolation and bind mount the stuff you need from the host system over there and maybe have some app armor or SE Linux rules to further tighten this.
Yeah, but then like how much of the host system do we mount inside the quote isolated unquote environment?
Yeah, so optimally we would just have like the user partition mounted there to have the whole OS, but that needs the whole user merge and handling of other stuff, maybe like etc changes and var. But it would be nice to have, I think, because you can just run normal devs and you have the isolation you get with the snaps and flatpaks, but you get all the advantages of the normal devs with security review and stable updates and stuff.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that because it's very much, at least for me, a goal to have be able to use normal dev packages at least so long as there is not a good consistent story for to have security maintenance of Snap or Flatpak and so on.
So I've tried doing this with BubbleWrap, the tool that Flatpak uses to sandbox applications. You can basically do it just with a few command line options. I've only used command line apps within BubbleWrap and it works fine, but I haven't tried the graphical stuff. I guess that would require some of the portal things that Flatpak sets up, which I'm not sure how that works yet.
Yeah, as useful information for people here who might not know yet, portals are they are a security concept where basically instead of, for instance, if you have events in a sandbox, events is a PDF reader, so instead of giving it access to all of /home, because you know it might potentially read a PDF anywhere in there, so instead of doing that, because Zenit has access to all your user data, and the sandboxing is a bit pointless if it can just rifle through tilde/.gnupg or whatever else. And so instead of doing that, basically you give it access through a socket to a helper that runs outside the sandbox. And basically when if you go file open, for instance, Evians will just ask that helper, hey, please bring me a file open dialog. So the helper then displays the file open dialog from GTK, for instance. So from a user perspective, there is no difference because it's the same graphical toolkit displaying the same window. And so the user picks whatever files they want to open. And then the helper sends back to the application, not a file path, but an already opened file descriptor. And so that's how you can basically move more or less handles for a file through the sandbox without having to grant extra stuff. So that's how it works for file mediation, but there are portals for things like webcam access and so on and so forth. I see that we have a bunch of people sitting in the back now. If you are sitting in the back because you do not want to be on camera, that's entirely fair, and I'm very glad that you feel comfortable coming in anyway. If you are sitting in the back just because you arrived late, I would invite you to actually come sit with us. So, yeah. And also, yeah, at any time, if you want to talk about something, just ask for a mic. Sorry, and now I entirely forgot what I was saying just before that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was saying, so that's how file mediation works with portals, but there are different portals for things like accessing the webcam and so on. And Zeus also give a fairly familiar user experience in the sense that it will do the same thing, for instance, that your web browser does, which is it will display you a tiny pop-up saying, okay, application foo wants to access your microphone and webcam. And there you just get the choice to just say no. Do not want Evians to access my webcam. And yes, they are, especially for sandboxing desktop application, quite useful because they can achieve things security-wise that would be extremely hard to do with AppArmor because there is no fixed set of file you want to be reading or writing to with your application.
Maybe this is a good point to introduce my idea for converting Debian into flatbacks. So I'm not sure how many people know how OS Tree and flatbacks work, but OS Tree is kind of a Git-based file store for systems. So you install the rootfs into this Git-like directory structure. And Flatpaks are built on that, so there are multiple parts of Flatpak. There's the runtimes, and then there's the applications, and they're both OS Tree, both stored in. You can store everything in one particular OS Tree repository, and so my thoughts were that because of ABI changes and stuff like this. That happen between stable and testing, and packages get removed, and so if you keep the old versions installed, you can't upgrade your system anymore. So those are the two motivations for me for this idea. It was basically to create some OS Tree base systems, like for each of the debootstrap targets, minbase, build D, and I think there's a couple of others. And then on top of that, build one Flatpak runtime per package, and then build a dummy app that depends on that runtime and has a few things over the top so that it works without having to rebuild every single package with /app instead of /user. So that's the difference between the Flatpak apps is they're installed in slash app instead of slash user. And so by doing this fake dummy thing, then we can get around that and build without having to build every package over again, which we already do on the build Ds. So yeah. And because everything's OS tree, it means that we would do well to also have OS tree images for the base system and maybe a few of the task cell standard install options. That's the general idea.
So, quick question. If I understand correctly, you mean you would want to apt when installing packages to install them in OS tree?
No, this would be pre-built OS tree / Flatpak repository.
Okay.
So you could just go to GNOME software and install Flatpaks from Debian instead of Flatpaks from FlatHub or wherever else.
Okay. But then I guess I'm missing the part where you go from having Debian packages to having OS3 packages, basically.
So the way it works is basically you debootstrap, import that into a Flatpak, into an OS tree repository, and then as a second layer, you do the runtimes and import that into the OS tree repository, and then for each app package, you install the dependencies and the applications into those repositories, and then import that into OS tree. So the advantage of using OS tree is that the files aren't duplicated, even if you have the same libraries in every Flatpak, because it's a content-based store, so it's based on the SHA-256 of the file. But besides the motivation of easy backports and installing obsolete removed packages, this would also enable the sandboxing stuff that you could use Debian packages with Debian security updates isolated in a Flatpak environment using the portals and all that sort of stuff.
That sounds kind of interesting because one of the problems that I see with the whole kind of we're going to ship applications in their little carry bubble of containerized stuff is that we're in danger of pushing the how do we do security updates problem to over there, and people say like, well, distributions are hard to do. Well, yes, they are hard to do. The reason we put a lot of effort into them is that people don't have to do them over and over again. And I like a lot of the things that the containerized stuff is doing, but they say no, it's okay. We'll ship the runtime. And it's like, well, that kind of mutates into a distribution then at some point. You know, you're just doing the work, and now you're doing it for five different versions of the runtime instead of maybe two versions, two releases of the distribution. So that sounds like it might be an approach to that could address that, sort of bridge the gap and hybridize the two approaches.
The biggest problem with this idea, I think, is probably scalability. I don't know how well OS tree would scale with like thousands and thousands and thousands of apps. I guess you could reduce the set by just creating apps for each package that contains an app stream file. That should be easy to do. I just wanted to ask Julian, I know that dpackage now has this --/ root option. Do you know if apt also supports that now?
Well, I don't think we have added support for that. But I guess you could probably work around it. There are several options to set a root dir for apt. And you could pass the root option to dpackage too, while the apt option to pass options to dpackage. So it might work, but I'm not sure how to configure it.
Yeah, Since you mentioned the scalability issue in making a single OS3 repository with many, many, many packages in it, would it make sense to instead have like regular dev packages, and on my machine the first time I say please install LibreOffice in a sandbox, basically build a local OS3 repository? Would that work out?
I think that could work, but it does mean that potentially thousands of client machines are doing that instead of the work being done centrally in one place once. So there's trade-offs.
So with regard to scalability, apologies if anyone from Endless is already here, but I think Endless already use OS3 to deliver their operating system, and it is Debian-derived, so I think it's Debian-derived, I'm pretty sure it is. So I believe it does actually scale reasonably well to large numbers of packages. I have no first-hand experience of that, but that's what I've heard talking to people from Endless.
Yeah, we'll definitely check it out then, but if they have like the whole Debian archive in OS3, then it definitely will work for us.
The other thing about scalability in this idea is that because I want to have obsolete things that have been removed from Debian that people might still rely on, that don't necessarily need security updates because maybe they're a game and they don't use the internet. So it could end up being that there are a lot more packages in there from the history of from snapshot Debian.org. And because everything, all the tool chain and library versions change a lot, there will be a lot more files in there. So, yeah. Anyway.
I will relay perhaps question. Should we move on to another topic? Okay, could someone remind me what were the other two things we wanted to discuss? There was how to reduce setup times for those sandboxes, and I forgot entirely what were the other two. What?
Better isolation.
Oh, right.
As-build,
as in how to use those environments for building packages, or?
Yeah, I mean, it was on the agenda. I don't know if we covered it already or not.
Okay, so there was a bit of earlier discussion about as-build. It was mostly as-build and SCH root as inspiration and possibly as like a tool we can extend to do what we need. Or not, depending on what we end up doing. There was not a lot of discussion, I think, about as-build specifically, but basically if you have the ability to set up an environment with and install extra packages and so on, as-build can definitely use that as a backend. I don't know if that answers what you had in mind. But yeah, it's very much something I have an eye on because, you know, if we want to be able to, for instance, if you are a Debian mentor and routinely get packages from people you are mentoring and build those, you probably might not want to have your whole system exposed to whatever is in Debian rules and what's not.
Should we talk about stuff like pip install, sandboxing? Like,
yes, please.
Language package managers, where you build the applications, you download stuff from the internet and execute setup.py scripts and stuff.
Yes, please, that's very relevant. My to say, oh, well, I wouldn't go as far as to say I have a plan, because having a plan is like far more organized than any of that stuff is, at least as far as I've been working on it. But like basically the kind of idea I had is if we can provide people with sandboxes, I could do stuff like whenever I CD into Devil Python, my shell just dumps me instead in my sch root or whatever in my sandbox for Python stuff, and there I have my own Python, there I have pip installed, but if I pip install whatever, it can only touch my Python development environment, for instance. But I would love to hear if you have like more thoughts about that things, because I, so far it was, at least in my mind, just another application to confine and not anything really special.
I don't know, you might want to have an application in Python that you want to install with pip, and then you want the application to access your home directory later on, but you don't want the build process to be able to access your home directory. So you could like build a special sandbox that contains just your pip modules you have installed locally in your home directory, and then bind all that into the sandbox and build the module in there, and then just exit the sandbox and run the application later on in the host system, or sandbox it too somehow.
Okay, that's pretty interesting, and I didn't give any thought to that. And is anybody else wants to react, or? Okay, I guess we're still like all kind of digesting your ideas still. Guess what I would be kind of concerned about is it can give people perhaps a fake sense of security, in the sense, I don't know if all of you heard, so I will guess summarize. There was recently a fairly high-profile attack on NPM, which is a JavaScript package manager. And basically what happened is that one developer got their account compromised, and they had access to a very popular linter. And what the attackers then did is basically publish a new version of the linter that would automatically grab credentials for uploading to NPM and send those over to basically a server they controlled. And I mean, that sort of stuff could definitely happen like in other package manager, like Cargo or pip or whatever. It could even potentially happen in Debian. Like one Debian developer gets compromised, bad upload is sent for pip for Lintian, and since we all run Lintian, hopefully, then we are all compromised. Woo! And yeah, that's a very big part of like why I organize this buff, and why I not particularly this attack, because it happened like really recently, but that sort of concern is more or less what motivates, I think, at least my need for isolated development environments and applications. And so, yeah, if we are saying we should build pip applications, for instance, in a sandbox, but make them available like unconfined, I would be kind of concerned about the same thing happening and just having a bad application running unconfined directly.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe you want to have them differently confined for the build and the runtime.
Okay, that's actually a pretty good idea, because there is no reason why pip should have access to my webcam, but perhaps if I'm installing whatever a streaming application, I might actually want the application to have access to my webcam and so on. I mean, if we support things like sbuilds, should be possible to also support like doing a pip install, whatever.
It's not just malicious things or other language package managers. So you know, if proprietary software developers provided .deb, you know, quite often, and I think mostly for reasons of inexperience, they do some hilariously inadvisable things in their post-it scripts.
Yes.
So I usually pull out the post-it script and just have a look at it. And quite often it's like, you know what? No, you don't actually need to run for me to install this application. I'll repack the dev without it. But it would be nice to isolate. So I've seen ones that try to, they do a few things. So one is it removes any cached config for that application, which was not completely unreasonable, but from your home directory, which is like, I don't think that should really be happening in the post-it script. The application should be taking care of it itself when it starts. And it also tried to kill anything with its own running name.
That's fairly exciting, actually.
Yes, yes. That was the reason that didn't get run.
So that's what I meant with untrusted devs. So I basically create declarative maintainer scripts would be the first step, and then you could have devs that you can safely install without them doing anything evil to your system. And then if you combine that with sandboxing for the actual app itself, you could have a safe app, basically. You can install random third-party packages and use them with the same safety guarantees as you have with containerized package formats like snaps and flatpaks.
Yeah, that sounds actually like something we very much would like to have.
Yeah, that's my vision, like for the last two DevCons or so.
Oh, we need to talk more then.
I think we're out of time, so.
Already? Oh, yes. We have even like 5 minutes over or something. So, yeah. Well, thank you all very much. And we'll probably try to go through the recording at some point and kind of summarize the discussion, write and send the summary to DevConf Discuss. So if all of you are already in there, we'll send it there. If for some reason you are not on DevConf Discuss, that's entirely fine. And if you want me to send you the summary anyway, please let me know, and I will just BCC you to that email, so nobody has to know you are not on DevConf Discuss. And yes, thanks a lot again. I feel it was a fairly productive discussion, and we have a lot of new stuff to work on, which, well, you know, new things to work on. It doesn't always feel positive in the sense that now the to-do list got bigger, but at least we know what we have to work on to make that sort of stuff happen, I guess, at least which directions we need to work on. So thanks again, everyone.